Ebullient volunteers.
Ebullient.
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 That's right. It's just that easy. It's so easy to become a member of KBOO. I can't believe it.
And there's nothing else to be said except right now, pick up your telephone or go online or walk in and give us some money. Really, this is so important. 1-877-500-5266.
If you want to make a contribution online, we can do that because we are firmly in the 21st century, ladies and gentlemen. KBOO.FM. Click on the donate button. And we'll be back at you next week. Thanks to all of you who help keep the lights on at KBOO.
It's coming through a hole in the air. Square. It's coming from the feel that this ain't exactly real, or it's real but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming.
Good morning, KBOO listeners. The time is 9 o'clock, and you are listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio station. We have a pledge drive going on right now, and I would like to invite you to give us a call at 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KBOO. Coming up after these next announcements is Alternative Radio. It's Stephen. Let me see if I can pronounce this correctly. Stephen Bezruka wants to make America healthy again. The senior lecturer from the University of Washington looks for ways to get what most Americans want, single-payer universal health care. And by listening to KBOO, you get universal radio for all. So stick around and give us a call. We have people answering the phones even during programming.
KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who donated food for our volunteers today. Lunch was provided by Musubi, located 2134 Southeast Division Street, Portland's takeout spot for Hawaiian sushi rice snacks filled with house-made spam and other delicacies. Dinner was provided by Santa Fe Taqueria, located 831 Northwest 23rd Avenue in Portland, serving the taste and flavors of Santa Fe derived from Puebla, Mexico. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 right now.
I think everybody should have access to health care without paying at the point of delivery. You know, I worked in Canada where that was the situation, and people just expect that that's only right. It's only in this country that people somehow think that, you know, they have to go bankrupt to access health care. It's crazy. People come from other countries and they can't believe the system here.
That's Stephen Bezruchka, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamyan. This edition of AR features Stephen Bezruchka on making America healthy again. The United States pays more for health care than any other country, yet has shamefully poor results. People are paying through the nose for their hospital stays, surgeries, and prescription drugs. An MRI in the United States costs 5 times what it costs in Australia. Instead of quality, affordable health care, we are building absurdly expensive F-35s, submarines, and aircraft carriers. And there's a cool $1 trillion for nuclear weapons. Our spending priorities are upside down. Every other industrialized country has universal health care. Since the 1970s, surveys have shown most people in the U.S. want a single-payer universal health care program. But Washington says that's off the table. So even though the public wants it, our so-called representatives, except for Bernie Sanders and a few others, are not considering it. maybe we should look to Slovenia for inspiration. Our guest today is Stephen Bezručka. He's senior lecturer in the Department of Global Health at the University of Washington. He worked for many years as an emergency physician in Seattle. His particular areas of research are population health and societal hierarchy. And now, Stephen Bezručka on Making America Healthy Again.
Health and healthcare, what's the difference? In asking this question, I'll also inquire as to how healthy we are for living in the richest, most powerful country in the world that spends more money on healthcare than all the rest of the world combined. What can we learn about producing health from Slovenia, a country that used to be a part of Yugoslavia? What's the commonest sexually transmitted infection? Finally, what is the medicine we need most in the United States? I'll begin by presenting my trajectory and how I came to ask these questions. So I began practicing medicine in 1973 in a very different climate from that present today. My clinical experience has been in three countries, Canada, Nepal, and the United States, and it's from that vantage point that I speak. I went to medical school after a brief career in mathematics because I wanted to do something unquestionably useful to society. So after completing my training, I went to work in a community health project situated in a Himalayan valley a week's walk from the road in Nepal. That may be hard to imagine, walking a week to get to work. So I lived there and was truly on my own as the next doctor was 4 days' walk away. Much of the time, I was the only white guy or outsider there. And that experience required self-teaching and cooperation with the mountain community as I improvised equipment and treatments for neglected illness and trauma. I wanted to help Nepali doctors do more with less. So after I returned from my initial work in Nepal, I became an emergency physician here to support my further work in Nepal. As an ER doc, I could take months or years off of work to go to Nepal and then return and get another job. The next thing, I had the remarkable opportunity to set up a remote district hospital as a teaching hospital for Nepali doctors that I supervised. Our care may have been makeshift, but we were determined to do good for our patients, and I taught by example. My Nepali doctor trainees cut skin grafts with razor blades and did emergency surgery in the middle of the night with flashlights. My clinical motto was honed during this period, namely, don't just do something, stand there, unless it is really clear that doing something is better than doing nothing. So I came to see that medical care could harm, something that Hippocrates cautioned about millennia ago when he said, primum non nocere, first do no harm. During the 1990s, I came across data that showed that our health in the United States was falling behind that of many other nations. This is really disturbing to me as I knew we had state-of-the-art medicine and we were wealthy beyond belief. In 1976, when I returned from Nepal after that first job, a week's walk from the road, I came across a book titled Medical Nemesis, The Expropriation of Health, written by Ivan Illich, who became a critically thinking hero of mine. Illich argued that medical care didn't do that much to produce health. That book was a catalyst for developing reasoning skills and led me to question important beliefs that I had not critically evaluated. In 1991, the first studies of medical harm were published as a series of three articles in the New England Journal of Medicine. That medical care could be a leading cause of death was very unsettling to me, as it could cast my work as an executioner rather than a healer. So I became very confused and lost almost 30 years ago. As a child, I had two rather ambitious goals, especially for someone who was the son of working-class immigrant parents. My father repaired shoes, my mom worked as my mother and as a housewife, and we lived above the shoe repair store. But I was interested in what we call STEM today, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. So the goals I set for myself in early adolescence were to harness fusion, the thermonuclear process going on in the sun, or cure cancer. So what was the impact of the work I was doing? Well, I was now doing. Instead of curing cancer, I got cancer. My cancer was caused by a state-of-the-art treatment for acne back in the 1950s, namely radiate the zits. Today, we call such changes in thinking medical reversals. We thought they worked back then, but then came to recognize they harm instead of help. Similarly, some of what we do in medicine today, we thought was not useful when I went to medical school. An example is giving aspirin to someone having a heart attack, which is now routinely done before you get to the emergency department. So what was I going to do? When you're uncertain, you return to school to see if you can clear up confusion. So I went to Johns Hopkins School of Hygiene and Public Health, founded in 1916 as the first such school in the world. In my application statement, I said I wanted to figure out what produced health in a population and why health outcomes in the United States were not stellar. There, I learned that social and political factors influenced health the most, and medical care, as I already knew, didn't play that big a role. As to why health was declining in the United States relative to other nations, the professors were silent. No one was funding that kind of research, and that remains true to this day. We only compare ourselves to ourselves and not to other nations. American exceptionalism remains rampant throughout this country, and if you know you're the best, you don't have to prove it. So amazing accomplishments have been done in this country, which might lead us to believe we're the best at everything. Except when it comes to our health, where we are less healthy than 35 to 60 other countries. Political and economic factors are the most important drivers of our health. So we need population medicine and population doctors to provide this. It won't be accomplished in the clinic or the hospital, but in the political arena as we people exercise our right to life. By which I mean a long life, not the short life we have in this country today.
We are coming back to Pitch Central, or Pledge Central, and I'm here with Ray. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning, Tave. So good to talk to you, and welcome back to our listeners to the fall membership drive. This is an important time of year for us, and for this particular hour, our goal is $350. We're just starting this particular segment of the membership drive, and this is a great opportunity for you to give a call in. Call us at 877-500-5266, or you can get to us by going to kboo.fm and clicking on donate, or you can, if you're using an iPhone or an iPad or a smartphone, you can use the KBOO app, go to the start screen and click on donate. We're making it easier for our listeners and friends to support community radio.
That's right. You promote cross-pollination between diverse social movements simply by providing a space for activists and leaders to share their work. And that space is KBOO. And we have to band together. Other media outlets normalize exclusion and group thinking, and we encourage communication and sharing of unheard perspectives. That is KBOO. And KBOO's time is now. So we want you to become a member today, and you want to become a member today. And you can do so by going to 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KBOO. Or going to kboo.fm and clicking on that big red donate button. If you are a member already and you would like to increase your sustaining membership, maybe you have that money simply and safely coming out of your bank account, coming off your debit card, or coming from a credit card, and you'd like to add maybe $5 a month, give us a call because we can do that too.
Become a member now and be entered to win a prize. And today's drawing is for 6 pairs of main stage shows from Portland Center Stage at the Armory. We're offering a new prize every day of the drive, so just call 877-500-5266 or go online and go to kboo.fm. And Tave makes a great point about the importance of sustaining memberships, and it was tough to get that out that hour of the morning.
It's a tongue twister in the morning.
But a sustaining membership is critical. It allows us to budget, and might I suggest that the right number to look for would be $25 a month.
Okay.
It's not a lot, and for $25 a month, you can get the fashion-conscious KBOO hoodie, complete with the tower and star logo. So please, listeners, give us a call, 877-500-5266. commit $25 a month, and we'll be happy to send you this bold fashion statement.
It's a really nice hoodie, too. This is quality hoodie. And I might add that this is the only way you can get it. You cannot come in and just purchase it. It's not something that's on the rack for sale normally. Less than $1 a day for the course of a year will get you that fantastic soft hoodie, perfect for these transitional times of the year when we're not sure if it's going to be cold or warm. And speaking of the arts, you hear more programs that center on local arts and culture on KBOO than on any other radio outlet. This is true. I also should make mention that KBOO is the longest running independent community-run radio station in the nation. I actually just found that out myself. And that's a very important thing, and you want to keep making that happen. So raise your hand, stand up, and count yourself in, and make a difference today by calling us at 877-500-KBOO or clicking on Donate on that KBOO.fm website. Maybe you're listening on the web. I'd love to hear some people from out of state make some donations, maybe make a call in.
And think about what Tave just said. 50 years, KBOO is coming up on 50 years. It is the oldest community radio station in the country. It can only do that with your support. So please, give us a call, 877-500-5266. Again, 877-500-5266. Make that commitment for $25 a month and get a lovely KBOO hoodie. Or you can do it by going to KBOO.fm and clicking on Donate.
That's $25 a month. Very simple. If you are somebody who is a senior, who is on limited income, maybe as a youth, and you can only make a one-time $25 donation, we would be so grateful. Please pick up the phone. We'd still love to talk to you. We have real live people back here answering the phone with a smile. We're here to chat you up. We are your community radio station. You can even come on down and drop off cash if that's the way you like to do it. And we have coffee from Grendel's, and we also have some donuts here. You can even say hi to Ray and to me. I'm even in the air room. I'd give you a little mini tour while the show's going on. Oh, that's our buzzer, Ray. We've got to go back to programming, but we will come back to you all. And we still have people answering the phones, so make your donation right now. 877-500-5266.
So accomplishments in the United States are astounding. During our history, we have flown the first airplane, produced the first atomic bomb and dropped two of them on Japan, produced the first hydrogen bomb. We invented the transistor, which produced integrated circuits that miniaturized electronics and led to the modern computer, which we also developed. We landed humans on the moon. We grew Silicon Valley to be the innovative hub of the world. We sequenced the human genome. As to our testimony of our ability, we won the most Nobel Prizes, almost three times as many as the next country. That's pretty impressive. So America is great, but not when it comes to our health. As an emergency doctor, the easiest diagnosis for me to make was that someone was dead. That's hard to fake in the ER. So I take the easiest way out and consider whether you're alive or dead as the measure of health. So measures of health as mortality rates are easy to come by. All you need to know is when someone is born and when they die. All of you know your birth date, since you report that all the time. Most of you don't know your date of death, but others will. In the ER, I have to fill out a death certificate and write the date on it. All rich countries collect this information, as do many poorer ones, and there are good estimates available in countries that don't collect such vital statistics. So birth and death records are some of the most accurate data we have. What can we learn from those? Well, let's begin with early life. If we take child mortality, or under five mortality as it is called, the proportion of children dying in the first 5 years, how does the United States do in comparison to other nations? There are many sources for this information. For example, the United Nations, the World Health Organization, or our Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation, a part of our Global Health Department here at UW. So take World Health Organization data for 2015 for child mortality. It puts our rank at 44th, meaning that 43 nations have lower child mortality rates than the United States. This includes all the other rich nations and some poorer ones, such as Poland, Belarus, Cuba, and Greece. Suppose we take one of the countries with a very low child mortality rate, say Slovenia, where our First Lady was born, and ask how many children would be alive today if we had Slovenia's child mortality rate. This represents something achievable. In the United States, for every 10,000 births, 65 children die in the first year of life. In Slovenia, only 26 children died during that period. Then look up the number of births in the United States in 2015 and multiply by 39, the difference in deaths per 10,000 between the United States and Slovenia. The answer is 15,513 deaths. That is the number of children that died every day in this country in 2015 that needn't, since Slovenia shows what's attainable. That works out to over 42 children dying daily, needlessly. That far exceeds the children dying in our worst school shooting tragedy. Our president sent Tomahawk missiles to Syria after seeing pictures of children suffering from the sarin gas attack there. The child death toll from those missile attacks was less than 42 dying every day here that needn't. So is our president killing 42 children a day in what I call structural violence? And what is the difference between structural violence and the usual behavioral violence? Well, Tomahawk missile strikes are an example of behavioral violence. Donald Trump gave the order to fire, the missiles were launched, and their destruction was obvious on the video news coverage. Behavioral violence is characterized by an action, the equivalent of pulling the trigger, causes visible injuries and deaths, and then there's the lingering smoking gun. That's behavioral violence. To be clear, our president is not responsible for the excess deaths in 2015 here. That happened on someone else's watch. We won't know the toll for 2017 until later when we get the data, but I think you have the idea. Since you've all survived childhood, consider the probability of a 15-year-old girl dying before reaching age 60. That's called adult mortality. None of us want people to die in their prime of life. So I mentioned Slovenia. A 15-year-old girl there has an almost 40% greater chance of surviving to age 60 than an American girl, 40%. Even a 15-year-old girl in Sri Lanka has a better chance of living to age 60 than an American girl. Same for a 15-year-old Tunisian boy. These are killer facts that can't be denied, but almost nobody knows about this carnage here. The cause is our economic inequality. Consider structural violence, the violence of inequality, to be like a colorless, odorless, invisible gas that is worse than sarin. Kills us from the usual conditions we die from: heart disease, cancer, homicides, lung and kidney disease, and we're totally unaware of its existence. This could be the perfect crime, but it is not, because even the rich and powerful fall victim to this gas of inequality. That is, there's no group in this country that can evade its effects. Studies demonstrate that the rich and powerful die younger than their counterparts in other rich nations. So inequality kills them, too. So structural violence, by its very nature, is almost invisible in contrast to the behavioral variety. The action that causes it relates to the economic and political structure of a society in deciding who gets what. Power relations are at the core of the actions that cause structural violence. Structural violence is taught in school when you take the Pledge of Allegiance, where you state there is liberty and justice for all. With a quarter of the world's prisoners housed in the U.S., there clearly isn't liberty nor justice for all. Not with our being dead first. You are taught that the United States is the exemplar to the world because of its democracy, founding fathers, and moral authority. So our political system decides who gets what share of the pie, and we slice up the biggest pie in the world. One way to describe this pie is to look at the wealth of the 8 richest people in the world. Their combined wealth is equal to that of the bottom 3.5 billion people on the planet. 8 individuals have more than 3.5 billion people. Who are those 8? Well, 6 are Americans, and 2 live a stone's throw from here. Bill Gates, the richest person on earth, is over there, and Jeff Bezos of Amazon is over there. Do these 8 people work much harder than the 3.5 billion people and so deserve their wealth? If not, then there's not liberty nor justice for all. So that inequity exists because of policies and processes put in place by corporations and governments. These institutions create poverty, and poverty kills. I used to think people were poor because they didn't work hard enough. I've come to see that people are poor because of the conditions we create to make them poor. Like mortality, poverty can be measured and comparisons across countries made. If we take measures of child poverty in rich nations, we have the most. Almost a quarter of U.S. families live in poverty, the highest of all rich nations. So in my quest to understand what produces health in society, I came to see that relative poverty or economic inequality was the driver of worse health outcomes. We have the world's highest paid people in the United States. These are hedge fund managers, and in 2009, one of them made $4 billion. One way to visualize how much money that is would be to take a stack of brand new $100 bills and stack them up and see how high they are. Well, it would reach to 100 feet below the summit of Mount Rainier. That's how much one person made in a year, and that works out to about $400,000 an hour. Nice work if you can get it, and in this country, we believe you can get it if you try. That's a lie.
We are coming back to our membership drive. I'm Tave, and Ray and I are here. We're going to be talking to you for the next few minutes about how important it is for you to become a member today. Ray?
And we just heard Steve mention a stack of $100 bills that would reach the sun. We don't need that much. We simply need you to make your monthly commitment and become a sustaining member of KBOO. For $25 a month, you can have the classic KBO sweatshirt with the star and transmitter. And this is your opportunity to parade your conviction and commitment to KBOO around town.
I always like to call it brag your swag.
Ooh, nice, nice. We're looking for $350 an hour this hour. This is your chance to give us a call and make your commitment. Show your support for your community radio station, KBOO. Please call us at 877-500-5266. Again, a little slower, 877-500-5266, or you can get to us online by going to kboo.fm. Choose the way you're most comfortable, but please take this opportunity to get in touch and show your support for your community radio station.
That's right. Your membership empowers people in your community to offer you news, information, and perspectives that are relevant to your life and that make you think and that make others think and make your children think and your parents think and your neighbors think and people that you don't like think. And that creates change. By being a member of KBOO, you are working towards making this a better place. And so please pick up the phone right now. Again, I'm going to say it. Raise your hand and stand up to count yourself in and make a difference today by calling us at 877-500-5266. And for those of you who are very visual, that's 877, and then it's like center, bottom, bottom, center, top, right, right. 500-5266. It's very important, and any amount is appreciated. We have people here friendly to answer the phones, but what we're really looking for is that $25 a month sustaining contribution. It comes very safely, very simply right out of your account, and each month you don't even have to think about it. That sustains us through the year. And by picking up the phone and calling us at 877-500-5266, you make that happen. And if you go to kboo.fm and click on donate, You can still keep listening while you make that contribution.
And if you become a member now, you'll be entered to win a prize. That's right. You heard me correctly. Mm-hmm. Win a prize.
It's a good one, too.
It is. Today's drawing is for 6 pairs of main stage shows from Portland Center Stage at the Armory. And it is a great little venue if you haven't had a chance to be there. So we're offering a new prize every day. This is today's. Please call us, 877-500-5266, to be entered for a chance to win. Or you can go to kbo.fm for rules and restrictions. Or if you're using our app on a smartphone or an iPad, just go to the start screen for the app and click on that bright orange donate button. Whatever is convenient for you, we're happy to be part of it.
That's great. And you will feel glad that you did it. And it'll just be a start for a wonderful day for you. So continue listening here to David Barsamyan. And we'll be back after these messages from David Barsamyan and also from Stephen Bezruka. Because we want healthcare for all. We want community radio for all, too. So please give us that call, 877-500-5266.
So how to measure income inequality in the world? Well, to gauge income inequality among nations, if you go to our Central Intelligence Agency's World Rankings website and click on the Distribution of Family Income Gini Index, you discover that Slovenia has the lowest inequality of the 144 nations listed there. The lower the Gini Index, which ranges from 0 to 100, the less inequality. The number the CIA quotes for Slovenia is 23.7. And then there are 104 less unequal nations before you come to the United States, with our Gini of 45. So in a sense, we're twice as unequal by this measure as Slovenia and pay the price with shorter lives. Remember the 42 children dying needlessly every day and our adult mortality being almost twice that of Slovenia. So in my career as a doctor, I've learned that inequality is the worst killer in society. The effects of inequality and poverty begin before you're born, even before you're conceived. As an example, consider children who have had heart transplants. Children in poor parent households are much more likely to reject their transplanted heart than those in rich households. This isn't because these children get worse care or they've already begun to smoke or other explanations we might consider. The first studies done in Boston Children's Hospital surprised the investigators, so they did a multi-center study that showed the same thing. Poverty kills. Why do we have so much child poverty or any other kind of poverty in the United States? Didn't we fight a war on poverty in the 1960s? No, we decided to fight a war on the poor. Let me explain, as it has a lot to do with power and democracy. So fasten your seatbelts, as there'll be some turbulence in flight. From this country's beginnings, the rich and powerful knew they were a small number, and so they needed to control people in order to maintain their power. The Declaration of Independence said all men are created equal. They didn't mean that, but used code words so that men meant all white men. They didn't enfranchise slaves who were not human. Founding fathers did not enfranchise women either. Remember, there were no founding mothers. Men were in complete control, and they made it difficult by making Election Day not a holiday, but a work day. And in most countries, in most democracies, voting day is a holiday so more people can vote. We needed a political system that disguised the real power base. Take our most recent presidential elections here. One party has always been the party of big business. They don't hide that. They said they'd believe in very little government. President Reagan said that government was the problem. We needed to do away with big government. Forget that Reagan raised the size of the government and ran up a huge debt. What matters is what he said, and that is what people believe to be true. The other party supposedly caters to the needs of small businesses and workers, or at least they say that. Now let's dissect the last election in this country. What happened and why? A little history. Since about 1970, the wages of workers have not increased in inflation-adjusted dollars. Employers said we needed to pay the CEOs more, so the workers were not going to have salary increases. We, the workers, did not protest, and accepted that situation. How did we cope since we now have much more stuff? And one could argue that our standard of living has increased a great deal as we have eye gadgets and fantastic media entertainment as well as designer meatballs. We coped in several ways. First, women entered the workforce, and employers, so families could make ends meet, and employers liked that because they could pay women less and reap greater profits. That only went so far, as we still needed more income to buy the products that were being heavily advertised to us. It became easy to not spend money, but to use plastic, and we ran up huge credit card debts. Then the economic bubble allowed many people to buy homes, even though they had no money. They pretended to live the American dream. Social spending was cut drastically. President Clinton ended welfare as we know it. You had to survive on your own, as government wouldn't help you. When Reagan ended low-cost housing subsidies and curtailed mental health care services, suddenly the homeless were in our face. We have the most homeless per capita of any country, and this serves our society too. So we have the highest poverty rates of rich countries and the most homelessness. As Professor Sir Michael Marmot, a social epidemiologist in England, wrote in about U.S. poverty in his book, The Health Gap, quote, "This must be the level of child poverty you want. Otherwise, you would do something about it," end of quote. So how does having so much poverty and homelessness serve us in the United States? Remember that the rich and powerful number only a few. If the rest of us organized ourselves to take on the rich and powerful, there would be no contest. We would win handily. But we, the people, fear the government. Contrast this with France, where the government fears the people. In the 1960s, when I came of age, we had the highest public involvement in democracy, both in the United States and in Western Europe. Voting rates here were the highest they've ever been. How did the rich and powerful feel about this situation? Did they welcome it as it showed that democracy was working? Well, the right wing has never been in favor of participatory democracy, but I would argue neither is the left. The Liberal Trilateral Commission was convened to look at the rise of democracy in the 1960s. Their 1975 report, used to only find it in Suzzalo, now it's on the web, it was titled "The Crisis of Democracy," was very explicit. If the heated protests of the 1960s continued, it would lead to an excess of democracy, an excess of democracy. That was not acceptable, and so they called for moderation in democracy. That was the language that these liberals used. So how was this moderation accomplished? Well, big business corporations were explicit in telling us our roles were to be workers and consumers, and this has to be taught in schools. They spoke of the difficult sell job to be done, namely getting us to accept our roles so the rich would have more and we would blame ourselves for not working enough. So we accepted that the rich would become richer and we would have less. It was the perfect crime. We slashed taxes on the rich and on rich corporations. We gave them huge subsidies that came out of our pockets. The Forbes billionaire list was created in 1987 to document the stratospheric rise of wealth. So income and other economic inequality has increased tremendously whether Republicans or Democrats are in the government. It increases more in Republican administrations, but it rises no matter who's in charge. Meanwhile, every government policy is touted as being really good for the poor. So fast forward to the present. 8 years under Bush II resulted in the huge financial bubble bursting. Rather than send the bankers to jail, as we did in the savings and loan scandal in the 1980s, we gave them money out of our pockets so they could pay themselves large bonuses. The banks were too big to fail and too big to jail, and the banksters had committed the perfect crime. Then the Democrats came in with the first African-American elected president. How did he help the poor? Well, he could have prosecuted the banksters, but he didn't. Instead, poverty increased, and we had large numbers of peopleless homes because of foreclosures, as well as record numbers of homeless people. What a paradox. with inequality at an all-time high, last November 8th, there were two choices, more of the same, or something that on the face of it sounded different. When there's great inequality, how do you behave? Well, consider what George Bernard Shaw, the British playwright, wrote in 1927, quote, "The woman from the brick box maintains her social position by being offensive to the immense number of people she considers her inferiors, reserving her civility for the very few who are clinging to her own little ledge on the social precipice. For inequality of income takes the broad, safe, and fertile plane of human society, stands it on edge, so everyone has to cling desperately to her foothold and kick off as many others as she can." That was in George Bernard Shaw, The Intelligent Woman's Guide to Socialism and Capitalism, published in 1927. So with a big gap between the rich and the poor, you're glad to have the poor to put down. You even want to kick them further below. And who are the poor today? Well, certainly African Americans and immigrants from Mexico and others who are stealing our job. Along comes somebody who says he wants to make America great again. As I pointed out, we're already great when it comes to wealth and creation, technological advances, and Nobel Prizes. What Donald meant was make America white again. Our country's complexion was changing. We have to get Mexico to build a wall. We have to deport Muslims. Women are getting too uppity. Remember his locker room talk. So if you're a white working male, here comes this guy that says what you hear in the locker room if you're lucky enough to have a gym membership. And if you don't, you still think that way.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to KBOO Portland's Pledge Drive. Ray and I are here. I'm Tave, and you've been listening to David Barsamian's production today that is an interview with Stephen Bezruchka about healthcare for all. And we are here to promote radio for all at KBOO Portland, and we're hoping you will call us at 877-500-5266 and make your donation today to keep radio on the air for all people of all genders, of all races, of all economic backgrounds who like to listen to music, hear real news, and also hear about sports. Ray, what else?
Tavi, I think, you know, you make a good point. Listeners, you are more informed about the issues because of KBOO's public affairs programs. You hear things you're not going to hear on mainstream commercial radio. You're going to hear local stories. You're going to hear international stories. It's all available here on KBOO, and it's available because of your support. We're looking for $350 this hour, and you can help us make that goal. And we want to start out. Wait a minute. Let me get my bell ready. We want to thank Kathy in Hillsboro for renewing her membership. Kathy, thank you so much. And why don't others join Kathy?
Thank you, Kathy.
And I want to point out that when Kathy renewed, it entered her into a prize for today's drawing, which is for 6 pairs of main stage tickets, shows rather, for Portland Center Stage at the Armory. And I know, Tave, you've expressed an interest in this too.
I have.
It looks like a great prize, and it's just one of the many. Every day it's a new prize. Today that's the one. So please, listeners, this is your golden opportunity to join Kathy from Hillsboro and give a call to 877-500-5266. Or go online to kboo.fm and click on that big donate button.
You can't miss it. And we're hoping for 3 people to call and make sustaining memberships of $10 a month. That's $120 a year, but that $10 a month, if we have 3 of you call and make that donation, we will reach our goal for this hour. And we know you can do it. You want to make a difference. They were talking about uppity women. Well, I'm one of them. You know, KBOO is something that if you've ever had people show prejudice against you, this is the type of place that re-educates the population into why that is not a good thing. We give you words that you can use to re-educate people, whether you be multiracial, whether you be alternative gendered, whether you be of a lower class status. KBOO helps you change that local community and that national community. We have people listening on air. We also have people listening online throughout the entire nation. And by calling us at 877 500 5266. You can make a difference, and you can help create equality for all by supporting KBOO Community Radio.
And for your $10 a month sustaining membership, you have options for two very attractive t-shirts. The first one would be one that celebrates Democracy Now!, Amy Goodman's outstanding program of honest information and honest reporting. The other alternative is the Higher Being KBOO t-shirt, and we'd like to think that all of our listeners are higher being. So please call us, 877-500-5266. Again, 877-500-5266. Or go online to kboo.fm and click on donate. And for you folks that are on your smartphones or iPads, simply go to the start page for the KBOO app and click on the button there. Whatever way works for you, we're looking forward to you taking this opportunity to join the KBOO community.
And by making a sustaining donation of $10 a month, you are helping sustain KBOO. That's exactly what it is. Each month, that money is going to just very simply, $10 a month, come off of your credit card or out of your checking account, off of your debit card. It's very simple to do. If you call us at 877-500-5266, one of our friendly volunteers will help walk you through that very simple process. It only takes 2 minutes of your time, or you can go to kboo.fm, and when you click on that donate button, there's a very simple way to just walk you through that step as well. If you are somebody that does not like a paper trail, I say just create your own little foot trail and walk in here to KBOO and drop off some cash or a check. We take those too.
Tavi, you make a great point. And more importantly than just dropping off the cash, by coming down and visiting in person, you'll see where your money goes. And one of the things I mentioned earlier is that the transmitter and translator tower rental for the station is $60,000 a year. That may sound like a lot, and you may wonder how that can be, but, you know, as I was pointed out to me, our transmitter is 26,000 watts.
Wow.
Imagine keeping 2,600 100-watt light bulbs lit 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year. You can see why we need your help. Please call us, 877-500-5266, or go to kboo.fm.
And when you make that call, let us know what size t-shirt you'd like, or if you've heard of another thank you gift that is really of interest to you, let us know that too. We'll be taking calls even during this programming. And now, back to that.
As I said, selected, since 2 million more people voted for the other candidate promising more of the same. So if the situation continues with the recently announced tax cuts for the rich, we will certainly see further rise of income inequality. If Trump carries through with having stuff made in America again, and if the U.S. corporations have to export products rather than import them, there'll be more jobs for Americans, but there will certainly not be higher wages. Remember, Republicans believe the market should dictate wages, and without labor unions, there'll be no pressure to raise incomes. Since Americans will be making more stuff in the USA, prices for goods will rise considerably, since up to now, what we buy has been made in China, where they don't pay people much. So we won't have the money to buy the stuff we're used to. If we drive up American exports to other countries, they won't be able to compete with Chinese exports since our goods will be more expensive. China, meanwhile, might have even greater problems because they won't be exporting their goods to the U.S. That will leave hundreds of millions of Chinese workers without work. That could be the breeding ground for another revolution there. So inequality is having its toxic effects in most places on the globe. One example was last year when people in the United Kingdom voted to leave the European Union. And then the U.S. election surprised the world. Well, you're not dead yet, and I hope no one has died so far. You've escaped childhood mortality, and the killer facts I presented won't matter to you until you're their victim. That is why it's so difficult to get people in this country to make comparisons with other nations on their health status. The other key point in understanding health is that early life lasts a lifetime. namely the conditions from the time of conception to the first 1,000 days, or certainly before we go to school, matter more for our health as adults than anything that happens after that period. So as we go from the erection to the resurrection, studies show that conditions that begin when we're conceived and end by the time we are 2 to 5 years old to determine much of our health as adults. You began life in your maternal grandmother's womb, since that's where the ovum that your father's sperm fertilized was made. So what is the most common sexually transmitted infection in the world? No, not herpes, not chlamydia, not HPV. Everyone in this room is infected. Life is the most common sexually transmitted infection. We're all here because of a sexual act. How we treat this infection depends on conditions in early life. So the fertilized ovum, now called a zygote, divides roughly 42 times, that number 42 comes up again, to produce a newborn. There are only 5 fertile cycles of cell division to produce you sitting here. So cell division is an extremely sensitive period. If you wanted to impact it, would you pick 42 cycles over 9 months? Or a further 5 over 20 years. Well, birth weight is a good measure of fetal development, along with whether you were born at term or not. And this helps us understand why African Americans have poorer health. No matter how well educated their mothers are, the chances of being born with a low birth weight are higher than for any other so-called race in this country. And low birth weight has been transmitted intergenerationally since slavery. No matter how much prenatal care these women get, they continue to have the highest rates of low birth weight and resulting health inequities. It's not fair. From an evolutionary perspective, we're here for one purpose, to reproduce and not become extinct like the dodo. The compromises we make in early life as we live in a womb with a view and see the outside world as stressful program us to modify our physiology to reproduce and pay the price later with all the chronic diseases we suffer from. First 1,000 days matter most for our health. Healthier nations support that period. We do not. One major problem is we conflate health with health care. We say we access health, we pay for health, we get health, we insure health, when we do nothing of the kind. We access health care, we pay for health care, we insure health care. Until we make that distinction, we will never understand health. Health care is a huge industry in the United States. As I said, we spend more than all the other nations combined on health care. In 2014, this was $3.2 trillion. That's a little over 3 with 12 zeros after it. A sixth of our total economy, and this industry employs 1 people in 9 here. So what is the relationship between health and health care? Well, what medical care really does is what can be called rescue medicine. The groundwork has been laid for better or worse health in early life. You get your chronic illness diagnosed and then take rescue medicines to limit the bad effects of high blood pressure or coronary artery disease or lung disease or diabetes or many cancers. We're talking about most of the chronic illnesses that will do us in. Medicine, surgery, and various procedures will only ease the wear and tear on the body until we're pushing up daisies. Recall I said medical care is one of the leading causes of death, something that became evident with the first medical harm study done by Harvard University and published in 1991. Since then, there have been more than a score of such studies, all with similar results. If you get admitted to a hospital in this country, your chances of dying from medical care in the hospital are about 1 in 100. Such studies get reported in, for example, a 2015 U.S. News and World Report on the best hospitals in the United States. Last year, a study by surgeons at Johns Hopkins University said that medical error was the third leading cause of death in this country. Not happy news. So when the quarter is over and you're flying home, what if you knew that the airplane had a 1% chance of crashing before arriving at the destination? I bet you'd be taking the covered wagon. But we consume medical care with reckless abandon. I'm not saying you shouldn't seek medical care if necessary, but be careful, it might kill you. Then too, it might perform its rescue purpose. So since this talk is being sponsored by a medical fraternity, Phi Delta Epsilon, I have to be careful about trashing the work I did over most of my life and the mission of the fraternity to do good by providing medical care. I'm not saying you shouldn't become a doctor or a PA or a nurse or a pharmacist or undertake similar careers in the healthcare industry. You just need to be aware of the limitations of healthcare. So consider a room with a sink on one side. There's a faucet there, and the sink is overflowing with water. Two people in white coats, one a man and a woman, are mopping up the water, but they can't keep up with the overflow. What needs to be done? Well, clearly turn off the faucet. But that's not the job of those mopping up the water. Medicine doesn't consider what needs to be done to produce health. This wasn't taught at Stanford Junior University Medical School in the early 1970s when I was there, and it still isn't taught in medical school today. I was just talking to a student who took my course a few years ago, and she confirms that. It's not the job of doctors to produce healthy populations. It's just to treat illness and injury. Diagnosing and treating illness and injury is what medical care is all about. Seymour Martin Lipset said, a person who knows only one country knows no country. We can only understand ourselves by seeing ourselves from different perspectives. So talk to as many people as you can, find speaking points. You know, you can draft an elevator speech. You know, you're stuck in an elevator for 30 seconds. What can you blurt out in those 30 seconds? And, you know, I've been kind of hard and strident in presenting this material here, and I don't know how well it sort of went over, but in the process of talking to people who don't agree with you, you might be able to communicate some sense of trust or respect for one another. You have to respect their ideas so they will respect yours. It's not a one-size-fits-all process, but getting to talk to as many different people has been a really exciting part of making this valuable for me. You know, homeless people in the Pike Market soup kitchen, a grade 8 sex class in Hood River, Oregon, just a variety of people, and you develop speaking points. But you gotta want, you know, so what are you gonna do? You gotta do something that you enjoy. If you don't enjoy it, you won't do it for long. Something you have skills at, and something you can do without getting paid, because there's no job category in this country that will pay you to make this country healthy again, I'm afraid to say. Thank you for your attention. It's really been a pleasure.
That was Stephen Bezruchka on Making America Healthy Again. He spoke at the University of Washington in Seattle. Stephen Bezruchka is senior lecturer in the Department of Global Health at the University of Washington. He worked for many years as an emergency physician in Seattle. This program is produced by Alternative Radio based in Boulder, Colorado. We are independent and part of the nonprofit media education organization, Rise Up. We are supported solely by individuals just like you. We feature progressive voices rarely heard in the media, such as Richard Wolff, Jonathan Kozel, Cynthia Kaufman, Cornel West, Chris Hedges, and Roxanne Dunbar-Ortiz. We also have a series of Stephen Bezruchka programs. To access our complete audio and book catalog, just go to our website, alternativeradio.org.
Hey, and speaking of alternative radio, we are getting alternative everything here at KBOO Portland, and it's our fun drive, and Ray and I are back.
Good to be back, Tave. This is an important drive for us, and, you know, listeners, you appreciate the wide range of lectures and interviews that David Barsamian brings to you, and I think it's important that you take this opportunity and show your support for the station that brings David to you. Please call us at 800-526, 877 800-500-5266. I don't know what I was thinking there. I think it was just an out-of-body moment.
I don't know. Maybe you're thinking of Ticket Tuesday.
It could be Ticket Tuesday, but let me repeat that number one more time, and then we'll tempt our listeners with the ticket opportunities. Again, please call us at 877-500-5266. Or go online and go to kboo.fm and click on donate. And Tave, we have some pretty interesting ticket opportunities here.
And I want to mention these thank you tickets are a gift to you for making your contribution and keeping this kind of important radio on the air. By making your contribution today, we're saying thank you to you with tickets that generally actually are worth more than what you are donating or pretty close to it. You're keeping a wonderful radio on the air, you are making a difference, and then you are getting thanked and having some fun.
Yes, and we have a good lineup here, Tave. Jeff Berner on the 1st of October. He's a electrically wild accordionist, and that's for a $60 annual pledge.
Mm-hmm. You can just make a one-time $60 donation, or you could do $5 a month.
Indeed, or if your interest is Molly and guitar, you may want to be available for November 3rd,
mm-hmm,
for Habib Koite, and that's only a $75 annual commitment.
If you have not heard Molly and music, it is really something else. I lived in Molly for a number of years, and it is world music extraordinaire. I mean, it's an entirely different tempo than you are used to, and just really something fantastic. And you'll be able to share that experience by talking about it later with your friends.
So please give us a call, 877-500-5266, and show your commitment to community radio and Molly and music. Or you can go online and go to kboo.fm and click on donate. And again, for you folks on your smartphones or your iPads, don't forget that the KBOO app start screen has a donate button there as well.
It does.
So whatever is the easiest way, please take this opportunity and show your support for community radio.
We have Ticket Tuesday. We have a number of different bands, a number of different times of October and November when they're playing, and they range anywhere from about $60 a year on up. So, you know, $5 a month and up, or flat out $60, flat out $75 and up. If you have something that you heard earlier or a type of genre that you're interested in, call us at 877-500-5266 and let us know what genre of music you're interested in, and we will give you a list of bands that might entice you to just be happy and musically